All right, it's another lovely time out on the podcast Truth to Power. Truth to Power is a podcast where we explore persecuted minority groups in Nigeria and their plight that they are facing. And on the program, we try our best to bring these issues to the fore and also seek for solutions to all of these. On the program Truth to Power today, we shall be looking at the impact of terrorist attack or bandit attack, or what other name do they call them, on minority group that most often than not happen to be Christian groups, and how this impact on life and well-being of members of those communities. My name is Ehis Agbon, and this podcast is proudly supported by Truth Nigeria. Truth Nigeria is a website where you get the latest information about what is happening in Nigeria and, of course, the world. Today on the program, I have my guest with me. He is one gentleman that I would say has traveled far and wide. He is one that is an authority when it comes to getting information in respect of bandit attacks in Nigeria, because I will tell you, he's walked the field and he has met with some of these persons and has a very clear understanding of their modus of operation and their end game when it comes to what is happening. I have a media personality, a journalist, a crisis reporter, and of course, a gentleman of the press, in the person of Mike Ode Akatu. Mike Ode Akatu, you are welcome to Truth to Power.
Thanks, Mr. Ades. It's nice. Thank you for listening.
All right, let's go straight to it. In the past couple of years, almost a decade or thereabout, there has been an increasing rate of attacks on minority groups in middle belt of Nigeria and northern part of Nigeria. If one wants to look at the history of all of this, it may date back beyond that, because in an earlier edition of the program we had, a historian, Edward John Alta, said all of this started way back, but in recent times it has become something else, because apart from the fact that most communities have become a little bit more cosmopolitan, now the arms and the instrument of war has also become sophisticated. In those days, they were horsemen, and in not too distant time, even in the South Sudan, they were the Janjaweeds, which is roughly translated to be horse riders, that most often than not were Arab horse riders. But in Nigeria, as it were, in recent times, we have this person coming in. This time around, not horse riders, but riding on motorbikes, superbikes, mountain bikes, attacking communities, and not wielding bows and arrows and spears, but this time around wielding automatic weapons, AK-47s, attacking unarmed minority groups that most of them are not, are smallholders, farmers, and living their lives in their community. While some people say that this is also a jihad, many people don't believe it's a jihad, but another sector of the populace also believe it's a jihad. But because whenever they attack any community, they always chant the popular Islamic chant, which we are not going to chant on this program today. All right, Mike Ode Akatu, looking at how all of these attacks has impacted on these communities and what you think can be done to resolve all of this on one hand, but first, can you also give us a little background of your understanding of these attacks that's been happening in minority Christian communities in Nigeria?
My understanding of this thing is that when we retrospect, when we go back, way back, these attacks started not in the 30s, but in 1803 down to 1804 during the Fulani Jihad. And I will tell you, during the Jihad, before the Jihad, the Fulani men from Guinea, from Mali, from parts of Sudan would come and raid the tribes of the Middle Belt and non-Northerners, otherwise Kwarara farms, and then take them and sell them as slaves to the Arabs. They did the same thing even in Zanzibar, in East Africa. Are you with me?
Yeah.
So you discover that over time it has become the trend that this thing has been going on. And now the people doing these very attacks are Fulani herdsmen, or the Moors or the Tuaregs, but mainly Fulanis, and they profess one religion, that is Islam. The people they are attacking actually are animists. So they see it as their duty then to annihilate the animists, turn them to either Muslims or take them for slaves. Over time, with the coming of the British, the Fulanis were gradually subdued, but not exterminated totally. Are you getting it? And then the nationhood of Nigeria, 1914 was amalgamated. Of course, then the Fulanis again were projected back to power. Before then, they were actually attacking communities in southern Kaduna, in Benue, and the rest, but without success. And that is why you can see that southern Kaduna, Plateau, Tafawa Balewa, and a lot of these areas in Nasarawa refuse or remain Christians these days. In those days, they resisted the jihadists
successfully,
but they were not Christians, but they resisted. And when Christianity came south from the south towards the north, they embraced Christianity. Now, there has been this animosity, feud between the Fulani Muslims and these very tribes, which we call the northern tribes. And that was why on the march to Nigeria's independence, we have what we call the Willings Commission. Okay. Now, under the Willings Commission in 1952, the northern minorities, actually the northern minorities are whom we refer to as the Middle Belt, they said they don't want to be part of the Middle Belt. And Willings, the chairman of the court, actually recommended that there should be a separate region. 1952 Willings Commission. When you invite me back again, I will still come back with the full details. And Willings Commission said actually there should be a region, the Middle Belt region, for these tribes that are not culturally related to the Fulanis, and they are not religious, they are not related religiously to the Muslims. And then, of course, there is supposed to be another region called the Core, Cross River Oguja. While the Southwest supported it, the two main players in the Southeast and in the North, that is the Fulani overlords and the Igbos, refused the idea of Core, Cross River Oguja, so that it would not whittle away their power. While the Fulani overlords do not want the Middle Belt to go because they want to play on it. Now, this is some of the things that happened. Then gradually, you discover that even in Benue, in 1914 or something, there was a reaction against the Fulanis, which led the British to nearly erase the town of the Donner-speaking part, because the Fulanis were attacked. Of course, they were seen as an intruder. Mm-hmm. Don't forget, a part of Idoma land called the Agatu, and also the Doma local government in
Nasarawa.
Now, if you look at Doma very well, they are culturally, they are related directly to the Idomas in Benue. Now, when the Doma local government, all you need to add is an I, and it becomes Idoma. Now, their mode of greeting, permit me to say, when the Idoma man will tell you, Agabaidu, that is the Lord of Lords, King of Kings, Lion of the Doma man, they also call Alagos, they'll tell you Abagaidu.
Just B and D.
Yes. Are you getting it? And so on and so forth. Now, in recent times again, the Doma, the Alago people were actually subdued, but they refused to convert to Islam. 100%. You still discover that about 60% of them are either animists or practicing Christians mixed with Muslims. But today, sadly, we used to have an Andoma of Odoma. Just like we have the Ochi Idoma, we have the Andoma of Odoma. That is the paramount king. But I just discovered that in recent times, under this APC administration, there was something that was termed the Emir of Odoma. That has never been there before. Are you getting it? Now I'm bringing us back. So you discover that over time, the quest by the Fulani Empire to dominate the other tribes started since 1802, 1804, and it has been ongoing. It has been replaced now not longer by slave trading, not by the shouting of jihadists, but systematically. They are degrading the people economically, they are degrading them politically, they are degrading them, they are terrorizing them, and they are using the military, modern ways of to degrade them, and it's like they are succeeding. Where they do not succeed with the force of arm or the use of terrorism, the government helps them to succeed.
So there seems to be complacency on the part of the government.
Of course, of course. And it has been so pronounced. That's why I told you. I said before now, we never had anything like the Emir of Doma. We have the Andoma of Doma, just like we have the Ochi Doma of Idoma land. All of a sudden, we are seeing an Emir.
Sadly, not to deviate too much, even coming to other parts of Nigeria, like in Kaduna State,
laws were
also enacted to erode some of these minority groups. Yes,
I want to tell you a little bit now. Shogun Onibio, a renowned broadcaster, was arrested when he alluded that the Bagila is grabbed rich baggies in Kaduna. They are almost 70% Christians.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, an emirate was created and attached to the Sabagi. And it's no longer even the Sabagi. The Sabagi is the paramount ruler. Used to be. All of a sudden, you see the Etsu of Chukwu,
which is just a local government area. Unlike before, when the when the Bagi land goes beyond just Chukwu local government,
bringing
part of towards the Kajuru axis, part of it, and all of that.
Then all of a sudden, you have a limiting clip enacted by Elrufai. Now,
and don't forget too, and Emir was installed in Kachia in place of the was this Kajuru chief, their traditional...
The one that died.
Yes. Agwam Adara.
Agwam Adara.
Yes.
Now, again, even the Emir we have in Jama. Jama is 99.9% Christian.
Yeah.
They ought to have a traditional ruler in that mood, not an Emir.
Yeah.
But to make it a point, they had it there. Now, you see, and in continuation of such, we are going to delve into it. This is just an over. In continuation of such hegemonistic tendency, the tendency to lord over and then to convert people to their faith by either coercion, the force is not going to work. We discover that in the state of Kaduna, which is roughly over 10 million, we are heading to around 13 million. It's equally divided between the Christians and the Muslims. This present governor in his cabinet have about 13, 14 mini commissioners. Only 3 Christians are in that commission.
Commissioners in the cabinet.
Now, who are they representing? Totally, you only have 3 persons to represent over 6 million persons. The rest are taken up by the Muslims. And the unfortunate thing is they are not even Muslims from the states, but Muslims from outside the states. Now, that goes to reinforce what the former governor was doing. If we can do this successfully, let's try it. Now, they have done that successfully in Kaduna. They will still go back to other states like Plateau, like Nasarawa, like Benue, and they would like to replicate it. It is a question of let's push it further. Now, coming back to the impact economically of these terrorist attacks on Christian communities, especially in the Middle Belt. I am going to tell you, let's look at the economic impact, first of all. According to Governor Samuel Otom, the former governor of Benue State, he said 2.5 million Benue indigenous who were driven off their land as a result of Fulani attacks are in IDP camps. And almost 1.something million of them are farmers. Now, Benue is known as the bread basket of Nigeria.
The food basket of Nigeria.
We supply rice, yam, and the rest. But as a result of this very banditry, this terrorist attack by the Fulanis, the farmers have been forced not to go to land. They have been forced off the land. So Benue no longer, when you talk about rice production, I'm not sure Benue is the top of the chain anymore. It's down. You talk of yam, when you call us Babandoya, it is at the law. We no longer produce food and mass. Therefore, an agrarian state like Benin, where the state government also depends on taxes from agricultural produce, the government no longer has a good source of income. And that is why our tongue is always crying, I cannot pay. And the farmers too, you know, 90% of Benue districts are farmers. If they cannot go to farm, let alone they cannot feed themselves, they cannot pay school fees. Economically, they have been degraded. They cannot get the basic necessities of life. So the tendency of them moving out of the state to other place to go and seek for menial jobs
there.
You see the economic impact. Again, I will still come back to how the federal government, and Mr. Issa, now I'm doing a piece on that, how the federal government is fueling Islamic militancy. Or Tom, for complaining that Fulani terrorists are killing Benue indigenous who happen to be about 90% Christians, but almost stigmatized. The subventions that other states used to get, which is the allocation, the federal allocation to each state from the federal government, was stopped to Benue. Benue was not given that allocation till Otom left, and he was always crying. He said, look, I have gone to the presidency. They told me they have signed. They showed me the paper. But disbursing it to Benue state government doesn't work. Of course, I suspect also the opposition parties in Benue would also be nudging the federal government to don't pay so that this man cannot pay salaries.
We have sentiment against things.
But at least we know that the federal government has a hand in the non-payment. It's using the economic might to subdue a governor who was fighting for his people rightly. Then, as he was shouting, Fulani, 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 and disturbing, you discover that the governor of Kaduna State, the former governor of Kaduna State, who has similar problem in his state, and who was always victimized, vilifying the southern Kaduna people, who are the wrong of the attack, started attacking Otom. And what was his weapon of attack? He said, rather than Otom paying salaries, he chose to whip up sentiment against President Buhari. He has forgotten that Otom is shouting, saying, look, where President Buhari is looking the other way, and the Fulani headsmen, who are President Buhari's kinsmen, are killing my people. He didn't say that. Then the governor of Bauchi to Bala Muhammad got up to start criticizing Otom. And he even went further. He said, these Fulanis are marginalized. That is why they carry arms. Should the Benue people too, who are now marginalized, start carrying arms? Benue, the governor of Benue actually inaugurated the Benue security.
Whatever defense, and there was a law to that too.
And he now applied for arms. The federal government denied it. But here in Kaduna, Kadvis carries arms.
Yeah.
Are you getting it? Now, you are denying Benue, the Christians,
the right to protect themselves.
A state that has been persistently under attack. So that's why I said the federal government assists. I'm telling you economically. So they use soft power to degrade the governor, and then they use the military force to attack the farmers and leave the state in a state of limbo. And it's either you submit to them or. Now, before I round up, I'll tell you. And the people of Benue actually refused to submit. They have been killed. And then the new government of Alia, when he won, he went to the president, now former president, and said, look, Benue will repeal the anti-grazing
law.
And he not only followed that, he said, Benue will be welcome to all. He'll be welcoming to all. He went ahead and then inaugurated a security outfit which has a Fulani headsman as the CEO to now be the one in charge of resettling the farmers. Now, I have an adage, or I have something. I know you know the American setup very well. In the wild, wild west, you know there's this war between the cowboys and the Indians.
Yeah.
Is it very proper? You give the cowboys guns and you tell them, protect the Indians?
No. Cowboys guns. You can never give meat to the hyena to protect.
That is what is happening. Now, the state of Benue has actually, through the governor, surrendered. But when the spate of killings refused to abate, the governor said, no going back on the grazing reserve. And Funa, one of the Fulani nationalist movement, threatened the governor, said, look, Reverend Father Aliyah, be ready for the worst. Repay us our money. The promises you make, either you fulfill them and all the monies we give, or be ready for us. Not too long, they started attacking.
Well, this podcast, Truth to Power, is one that is highlighting persecution of minority groups in Nigeria, most especially Middle Belt and Northern Nigeria, for the benefit of those that do not understand the geographical configuration called Nigeria. Benue is a state in the Middle Belt of Nigeria, captured as a North Central state, if we want to follow the political demarcation, but it is popularly called the Middle Belt region. Plateau State is in the Middle Belt region. Kaduna State, captured as Northwest Nigeria, but southern part of Kaduna choose to identify as Middle Belt Nigeria. Don't forget too that Nasarawa State and part of the FCT, all of these are states in Nigeria, and these states are captured under or identified as the Middle Belt of Nigeria, and these persecutions have been very, very active in this state. That's why Truth to Power is speaking Truth to Power and highlighting all of this. We want to also remind you that the program Truth to Power is supported by Truth Nigeria. Truth Nigeria is a website where you get up-to-date information about what's happening in Nigeria. Most importantly, security alerts on the regular come to you on Truth Nigeria. And you can go to Truth Nigeria website at www.truthnigeria.com. Yeah? www.truthnigeria.com. Of course, when you get there, you will be able to navigate to the various social media handles of Truth Nigeria. Coming to the program and about to wrap up this program this evening. Now, having heard all of this, we know that there must be a stop to it or a solution to all of it. Now, as someone that has been on the field, you've met with all sides and all angles to this particular story. What do you think is the practical way out of all of this?
Well, Mr. Hayes, there is no end in sight to it, so long as there is hypocrisy, and so long as the foreign government, especially America,
yeah,
don't want to intervene. I get it. It took the struggles of Nigeria today. It's almost like that of Southern Sudan. Southern Sudan started fighting, the Middle Belt part of Southern Sudan started fighting in 1955. 54, 55, almost a year before they got independent. And the 40s, 70s, till 80s, till 90s, till when George Bush decides to wade in.
Yeah.
And if Donald Trump was still in power, I would have said he would have waded it now. Now, back to your question. We have no choice but to keep speaking. The Middle Belt people will not go away just because the Fulanis want their land. We are producing. And we are trying to see, want to do an enumeration of Christians in the Middle Belt and northern part of Nigeria to see how many we are. We have always been referred to as minority, but my hunch tells me we are not minority. In Benue is about 10 million. We are 90% Christians. Plateau, the same thing, we are Christians. Nasarawa, we are almost 70% Christians. Don't forget, Taraba, you did not mention, is part of the Middle Belt, but it is in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
Part of Adamawa and Middle Belt,
mm-hmm,
it is in the Northeast. Then, the other states that choose to be part of Middle Belt are Southern Borno.
Yeah.
You understand, they are Christians, they are not good. They are always, in short, the current chairman of the Middle Belt Forum is from Southern Borno. Then, again, let me remind you, Kaduna is the birthplace, was the birthplace of the Middle Belt Forum. In this, yes, in 1959, the Agua at the Anguan or whatever the paramount, the one that this hospital was named after him,
Governor Awan,
was also a member of the Middle Belt Forum. While Joseph Kaka was, Obafemi Awolowo was also there. So it was in southern Kaduna Kafanchan that the Middle Belt Congress was actually Paul. Oh. So yes, I'm telling you this. You understand? So now, if we want to end the attack on the Middle Belt and the Northern minorities, what you are doing is what it's supposed to be. Speak truth to the power. Then, please tell other people overseas, especially the American government, that this is it. You see, and what they hate, what our overlords hate, the people that are actually in government, they don't want to hear that Fulani militias attack minorities, so-called minority, Christian minorities. They want to make it look as if it is the Fulani skin conflict. Yes, there's just a minor clash. But it becomes a David versus Goliath when one is armed with heavy machine gun, anti-aircraft, RPGs, and the other one was sleeping in the night, and then you come and then you loot any bonus, absolutely, you kill everything. Most of the attacks that happen on Christian communities are not attacks, they are sudden attacks, they are planned, and then they are carried out steadily, especially in the night. Before the people get up, the act has been done. And in 90% of it, the army will claim they came late or they got low. And unfortunately, again, the commanders, and I used to write in my write-up, under Buhari especially, the chief of army staff was a Muslim. The defense staff, chief of defense, well, that's a Christian, but that's just a nominal power. Then the national security advisor, a Muslim. The minister for defense, a Muslim. The police, all of them are Muslim. And when they go for Federal Executive Council meeting, and you bring up the issue of Southern Kaduna, the Atia, the Baju being attacked, what language will they see? The Muslims will just say, let them go, these are minorities. Because they will speak the language. First of all, they will go to the mosques and then they pray, and that unity is there. And they begin to see the people that have been under attack as even the people that are propagating the attacks. And then they start shouting. Is it because somebody was killed and that is why you are shouting? So you understand. So we need to keep shouting the more.
Okay.
Let the world know.
Let's continue to speak and speak out and highlight all of this issue. All right. That's about the size of this podcast today. I promise you that some other time I will definitely bring Mike Ode Akatu to the studio so that we'll talk more about all of these issues. Until next time when we'll be on again, remember, fresh edition of the podcast Truth to Power comes up on Thursday at 7 p.m. with a rerun on Sunday at 7 p.m. on Procyon Radio. And of course, don't forget to go to the website of Truth to Power, and don't forget to visit the website of Truth Nigeria, where you'd also watch and listen to this podcast. Truth Nigeria website is at www.truthnigeria.com. Go there, you see this broadcast and get other details and information about Nigeria. And most importantly, regular security alert that all are almost on point. Michael Diakatu, thank you so very much for having time to be on Truth to Power.
My pleasure.
I am Ehis Admore. As always, I would say, go placidly amid the haste and noise, and remember what truth there may be in silence.